Well, hello everybody. My name is Manit Shah, and if you're wondering what that means, it means one who wins everyone's hearts. And today that's what I'm trying to do. Because you're the future, I am the future, and along with Evolving Habitat, that's what we're trying to win everyone's hearts. So this is no ordinary podcast. We've got the best global voices who've been shaping yours, mine, and everyone's living spaces. So today we've got...
This is architect Aparna Kaushik. We do high-end residential architecture and interiors, pan-India and abroad. I've been at it for the past 15 years and it has been a great journey and I'm happy to be here.
Hey everyone, I'm Nishita Kamdar. I'm an architect and we create beautiful homes and spaces.
I'm Jannat Vasi. Our studio was established over a decade ago and we run a multidisciplinary studio specializing in high-end homes, hospitality and commercial projects. We are the definition of luxury.
I'm Aisha Puri Kanoria from Sanjay Puri Architects and we are the second generation of architects specializing in unique and one-of-a-kind design.
So how did this journey start? Did you always want to be an architect or get into the space or?
So for me, my parents were architects and for as long as I can remember, I've been forced to go to sites with them since I was maybe 5 years old. I was taught AutoCAD in the seventh grade. So I don't really think I had a choice in the matter. And then in the 11th, 12th, they're like, what do you want to be? I'm like, did you really give me a choice in what I wanted to be? So it was like a no-brainer for me, really. And it came very naturally because I'd been so used to all of this that I really feel like there was no other sort of alternative career I could have chosen.
And this is how before, architecture colleges came into being. I think every parent architect's son or daughter would be an architect because they've been groomed from childhood. This is what used to happen before the universities were formed, actually.
So strangely, it's opposite for me because I'm the first architect in the family. And like any typical young student or child who doesn't want to study, I was just thrown into architecture college by my parents because they're like, okay, just let's try something for you. And that's how I got into architecture and no regrets from day one.
So you were forced into it?
I'd like to say I always had like an artistic side to me, so I think this seemed like a good option at that point, and I'm glad it was that way.
No regrets now?
No regrets at all.
Great. What about you?
So for me, actually, it was strange. I was always artistically inclined, and I was an artist, won these SAARC competitions when I was in school, because my mom is an artist, and my father was in the creative field, so he's into printing technology, but he always told me that do what you love, and you never have to work a day in your life. What happened is that when I was in school, and I transitioned into higher education, my friends were into going into BCom and into finance. And I, at that time, was following that journey. It was my father who noticed that I was not happy and I was not in the correct field and true to the potential that he saw in me. And he actually steered me towards interior architecture and towards building spaces. So that's how I got into it. And in fact, Aisha, you mentioned that you were doing AutoCAD and you were going on sites at a very young age, which now my daughter is also doing. So she comes to me. She's been to trade fairs all over the world because I take her there. She's really young. She's in a stroller, but she loves it and she sees me. So I feel that kids observe and absorb. So what happens is that, and that's why you mentioned that architect. So this happens in every field, whether it's an actor, whether it's an architect or any field. What you surround yourself with is what your affinity is towards eventually. So yes, that was my journey of getting into architecture.
Great. So let's go back a bit. What is it like after finishing architecture in college? What is the next step that y'all took?
I feel...
What is looking for internships like that?
Yeah, so that was experience is very important. I would like to tell this to everybody that you might be from the best university, right? But practical knowledge, especially in our field, because majority of our work happens on site, understanding how to solve those technical issues, problem solving, again, I would come back to my dad, who always says that be a solution provider for your client, right? They need you for a reason, so that you're there to make their life easier. So getting the right experience, working with architecture firms whose ethos and maybe design language resonates with yours is very important before you probably look to start on your own.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. Because in my case also, when I finished architecture, looking for an internship was actually quite difficult because, you know, the big names in the industry would have hundreds of people working for them. And when you enter their offices, you would feel lost, absolutely lost. You know, you were given a desk and mostly drafting jobs, and, you know, you were like craving your seniors would take you to the site. So I interviewed with almost 20 firms. Most of the places where I got selected, I didn't end up going also because I couldn't picture myself there. But I ended up joining a very small firm where this is what I feel that, you know, even I tell interns and the younger generation who apply for interviews is that you, when you're learning, join a small firm where you're given more responsibility and you're able to be next to the principal. It's only when you're looking for your growth that you should venture out into bigger and larger firms.
No, absolutely. And now we're almost, you know, seeing this strange shift as well that, you know, kids that are getting out of college want to directly go into like a master's program or a finishing school. But I feel like practical knowledge is the finishing school. I mean, working in an office is the finishing school that you actually require. And master's should be treated more as a subject where if you want expertise in any other kind of, you know, line, then you kind of decide to go for a master's. You know, there's absolutely no kind of value addition if you don't know what the actual, you know, what the practice is
specialization,
about.
Specialization, basically, yeah. For master's.
So yeah, jumping straight into work was like, for me, after school, after architecture school, was like jumping straight into work.
Well, it's the same for me. I'm hoping I have the same experience.
I think mine was really different because I studied at the University of Bath, which had a degree where in your third year and your fourth year, you're doing 6 months on campus and 6 months on a job. So it was designed that way. And I think my parents encouraged me to take up this course because of that reason, because it's so interesting that you get your practical knowledge while you're studying. Because I studied 2 years, I worked in London for 6 months, I came back to college, I worked again for 6 months and then went back. So it was like, by the time I was done, I felt like I had got a way more holistic form of education than you would typically get. So I graduated and came back on a Wednesday and started work on Monday. So it was fantastic. There was no finding internship.
I think that's what happens when you really love the profession that you're in, that you can't wait to get to work. So the morning starts where you're excited and you're enthusiastic and you want to get on your desk and you want to create. So I feel that applies to every field that you're in. And if you don't find that joy in your work, it won't come across.
No, and especially in field like ours, I think if you're not passionate, you won't last. It's absolutely not possible because the challenges are enormous and every new project is a new challenge. Like my parents, they tease me that you are a psychiatrist. Most of the times that you're talking to clients and, you know, the kind of discussions you're having, where is the technical expertise in this? Yes. I said, no, that you don't get to see because that is a separate part.
Yes.
Because mostly when you're home, you're talking, you know, these long hours trying to convince them about some layout, some design. Or something. I mean, this is a joke within
We're
my
trained
family.
Multitaskers. Also,
absolutely.
Yeah, I think.
You need to be sensitive. I mean, the technical aspect is one which comes with college and it comes with education. But again, amassing that experience of how to tackle a situation, you know, very diplomatically, kind of also in tune with what they are looking for is more of a role as compared to executing a particular thing tangibly.
Well, talking about situations, what was it like having a situation when you just started off? How would you deal with it?
So I'll give you this one example. So what happened in our university is that we had professors who encouraged design, conceptualizing completely out of the box. So we were not conformed to any particular, technically not driven, but more conceptually driven. So when I started off on my own, and then that carried forward into the 3 jobs that I had when I finished my design school. When I started off on my own and I was really young and I got a project and I gave it my all, I was on site one day and my client told me that, can you please submit the electrical layout tomorrow? And we weren't equipped to do that in college. I didn't know how practically that worked because it's a very, very technical subject. So that's a situation where I said, okay, because I had to put a front where I was like committed to a project, I have to deliver. And in that one day, I actually sat with a senior architect. I went there, I requested him if he could just train me on how this works, and I delivered that. So I feel that, and that's when I understood that it's not as easy as it seems. Design is one, but putting that into the realm of a space,
execution, reality,
and doing that technically, flawlessly, is a completely different challenge. So it's not easy when somebody says you're into architecture, interior design. It's not decoration. We're not styling a space. Yes, we do, but that's the last part of it. Conceptualizing it, layouting it effectively, thinking of circulation, functionality, meeting all those different criterias and parameters, I feel that's more important.
Which I believe is like our superpower. I mean, you know, which is why I say that we're multitaskers as well, you know, and talking about situations and superwomen, I think, you know, back in the day, like I'm sure we've all faced that situation where clients think that you're just a beginner and, you know, you're a lady and you're a woman, and that you won't have the same kind of knack that a male would bring to the table. And I've had that situation, you know, where they're just like, they undermine your ability and think that you won't know these technical aspects and won't know these kind of very, what seems to them as like, you know, larger issues and ideas. But, and I think that's when like my inner confidence just like kind of snaps in, and you're like, you know what, I know what I'm doing, and you've hired me for a reason. And I'm going to give you that reason, you know, like in the form of a design or in the form of a solution. And I think for me, these kind of obstacles where clients constantly undermine you and, you know, kind of challenge you.
Or like, that you're too
you
young
to, like,
to
a
handle.
Certain, yeah, too
like,
young to
I
handle
always
this.
Tried before my age to look older. Like I tried my glasses, I would try to look more mature, talk mature. I would try to act out of my age, take a senior guy with you on the side so that you come across as more serious.
Yeah.
People would take you more seriously. These kind of situations.
Yeah, but let's
like,
face it, as women, we've had to do
yeah,
this.
Yeah, yeah.
At some point, we've all had to do it, and it's funny why we have to do it.
So I would just like to interject here, Nishita. So I feel that we are in an era today where hard work and talent doesn't go unnoticed.
Yeah.
Maybe years back, like I'm talking decades ago, this was not the case. But today, if you have that, if your knowledge in your field is deep enough and good enough and you're up to date, I feel that that exudes a certain sense of self-confidence, like you said. And then the client automatically trusts you. Unless you have the trust factor built with a client, a project cannot be seamless.
Absolutely. And also, you know, when your products start shaping and when actual buildings are standing, that's when the challenges become more easier and easier and easier. That's what I felt, that no amount of talking or Instagram or this or that can help you. I mean, it can only introduce you to a certain sect of people and reach out to a certain audience. But ultimately, nobody is going to bank money on you if you're doing high-end work, luxury work. That's serious money just because, you know, you have a marketing plan or this or that. Your product has to speak for itself.
Yes.
And as you go along your journey, the more number of products that are out and the lesser you need to prove yourself.
True. It can be a catalyst. So marketing can be a catalyst. But
at the end of the day... It can be only a tool to reach out to a certain audience who doesn't know about you.
Right.
And then it is after that your work would stand tall for itself.
Completely agree. But going back to Nishita's point, do you think when you started off, it was a completely male-dominated industry?
So I'm an architect, and I think for the longest time, or probably I'd say just around the time where I got into architecture school, I feel at that point too, it was always a male-driven profession. You know, it's only very recently that more and more women are starting to get interested in architecture.
Like how?
And how, you know, which is amazing. And I mean, just to give you numbers, I think we were just like 9 or 10 women and around 40 men in my class. Whereas now I have, interns who've joined us from other colleges where there's just one guy and I think around 25 women in their batch, which is amazing. So that's a great change we're seeing.
Also, one of the aspects of the design industry, which is the project management and execution, you'd find a lot of women still in the design industry. But when it comes to execution, project management, construction, you will find very, very less number of women till date.
Honestly, when we go to site, I'm the only lady.
Most of the time.
This has been happening since over 10 years that we go. Up until now, I haven't realized that. Because we are so involved in our, when we are on a site visit, when we are in action, we are so involved with a client or with the execution team that you kind of tend to miss that, at least for me. I feel that, again, it maybe has transitioned.
I prefer to miss that. I prefer to blur that line.
Because if you don't, if it doesn't matter to you, it won't matter to the opposite
person. Exactly. I prefer blurring that line, absolutely.
Yeah. While we're talking about education, how do you think the Indian education system is built for architects and interior designers? Do you think some other country is better than us?
So, is
there something lacking here?
There is lacking.
I have several points on this.
Like she mentioned that 6 months of your training program was taking actual lessons in the class, but then there were lessons on the site as well. I think the connect between the two is really missing in the country.
You need to be on the field.
I think we're being taught from books that were written decades ago. And the construction industry, the management has completely changed. And you're still teaching the same subjects and the same books from reference.
The university still teaches methods of construction that were used hundreds of years ago.
That book is still there. I'm shocked.
Yeah,
now.
It's still going on. And, today, in fact, just literally today before coming here, we had a situation in office where the two interns who we have, they're probably 12 years younger to me. They came up with a design on AI and they said they use this software in college. And I was shocked because I said, is your college allowing you to design on AI, which is crazy because where's your creativity? You're just typing words. And that's how the education system has changed. And shockingly,
it's all become a shortcut, but that doesn't work in real life.
It just doesn't work.
Yeah, so it could be a tool. So AI again can be a tool that aids you to conceptualize. Maybe you have some thoughts in your mind, so it can just give you some very, very loose ideas and versions of that. Yeah. But you need to adapt that into your canvas and your space. And for that, you need knowledge of how design works, how space works, how you can, create a very, very effective layout, for example, because that's what matters.
The rigor is missing, right, in AI?
Yeah, it is.
But okay, my biggest complaint with colleges has to be they don't teach students communication skills. I feel as a designer, you're a salesman of your designs 24/7. You're a salesman. I'm selling my design to you, And they just don't teach them how to talk, how to write an email, how to apply for a job, how to present themselves, how to present their design, all of it. And I feel that needs to be added into the curriculum because, nobody had to teach us that. We just winged it. But now I think it needs to be spelled out.
For us, it was always like you're learning with the years as they are going by. Every time you make a mistake, it becomes a learning and you try to improve yourself.
Yeah. In fact, for me, I learn from my clients. That's something that I do, where I also, because they are really accomplished people. So I feel that rather than us only giving from them, we should also absorb a lot from them. We have clients from different industries who have accomplished so much at such high levels that for me, I am observing how they communicate, like you said. So this is it's the best thing that you've said, where you need to know how to talk to people, how to come across. Also, when you're representing a certain firm, for example, the people who are working at our studio are representing our firm, which we have built with so much love, painstakingly, over so many years. So I feel that if they do justice to that, that is when people want to work with you. So that's something that's missing. And yes, practical knowledge, because I remember when I was in college, we were doing these technical drawings without knowing and seeing how it actually works. On a project.
That's true. Every day is about learning. But for you, Aisha, what is it like studying in the UK and then coming back and working here? Do you see a big change?
Yeah, I think most importantly, the way we were taught internationally was to design for that climate. So we were given very practical projects where, you're designing a shipyard in Bristol. So go to the site, survey the site, design it with, you know, two layers of insulation. And the way I learned was literally to build in the UK. So when I came back, it was this huge, you know, like paradigm shift into how am I supposed to apply this to these Bombay weather conditions? And how am I supposed to like fully adapt to this whole new landscape? So for me, it was very much about taking every project to my parents and asking them to help with everything. So I'd get like scribbles on all my drawings, first from my dad, then from my mom. And then I think, you know, just no knowledge goes wasted. So it's kind of like, you're like a sponge at that age. You're just absorbing everything around you. So I think it was really helpful for me to have them guide me because I had my dad's like constant need for inputting creativity in my work. And I had my mom's like very detail-oriented approach. So this came together in a very nice way. And for me, I think that's what really helped me adapt my foreign-based education to the Indian sort of way of working.
Yeah, but since you have accomplished parents in this field, would you rather have spent 5 years learning from them?
No, I don't think so. See, I was like, I'm always going to work with them. So I might as well work with as many different people as possible. So actually, I think from the 11th grade, even before I did study architecture, every summer job, I worked with an architect. So in fact, I worked at a firm where Jannat, my first internship was at a firm where Jannat's last job was.
We just discovered this before we started shooting.
Did it all over up ever?
We didn't. I think we just missed by a couple of months.
I joined and they said, you know, there was a girl before you who was as, you know, like into the same things that you were.
Really?
That was Jannat. But so for me, no. Like the answer to your question is I wouldn't have it any other way. I wouldn't want to have worked with my parents because I knew I was always going to go back to that. So I learned as much as I could from different types of designers, maybe like 7-8 types of designers. And I feel like that each firm taught me something new. From working at a firm which was maybe 10 people large to a firm in London which was 300 people large. So you learn at every step and it's about putting all these principles into, channeling all of that into the work.
I also feel one thing is when what you said, working with other people teaches you what would work for you eventually, but it also teaches you what you don't want to become. Yeah. There have been certain aspects and certain experiences in my journey when I worked with 4 architects prior to starting, which I wouldn't want to take back into my practice. So I feel that's also very important, where you learn what you want to do. So it's kind of filtering. At a very young age, when, like you said, you're a sponge, you're filtering what is good and what is bad, and how to be the best version of yourself.